Welcome to today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. I'm your reader. My name is Rachel Thorson Mithelman. The first headline on the page is, It's That Time Again. And the subheadline is, CHEUDMO will host a back-to-school block party. This is by Kelby Wingert. As summer winds down, the start of the new school year is just around the corner, and two local agencies are teaming up to be a one-stop shop for nearly everything families will need to head back to school. The Community Health Center of Fort Dodge and Upper Des Moines Opportunity, Inc. will host a back-to-school block party from 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at the Community Health Center, located at 126 North 10th Street. The event is free and open to the public. In previous years, the two organizations had held separate events, but this year, they decided to collaborate for the block party. It just makes sense for families, community resources, and our donors to hold our events together, said Regina Serbier, outreach coordinator for CHC. With the renovation of our lower level, we were able to offer the space for packing backpacks this year. I think it makes it easier that we aren't making multiple events that families have to find the time and transportation and be out in the heat for, added Jamie Johnston, a specialist with UDMO's Family Development Program and Self-Sufficiency Program. UMDO is expecting to give away about 300 backpacks filled with school supplies for area families in need of financial assistance. Many of the backpacks and supplies were donated by local individuals, businesses and organizations, Johnston said. UDMO also purchases school supplies when there aren't enough donations. This week, volunteers from the Douglas Dreamers 4-H Club are helping sort, organize, and pack the school supplies and backpacks. The 4-H'ers have volunteered to fill the UDMO backpacks for many years, club leader Linda Klein said. Klein is also the program coordinator and PROSPER team co-leader for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, Webster County. It's helpful having all of them here, said Johnston. It makes it go a little bit quicker when we're packing. The Community Health Center will be offering walk-ins for free well child checks, immunizations, sports, physicals, and dental exams at the event. Appointments are available from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., but from 5 to 8 p.m. it will be walk-ins only. Registration paperwork can be completed in advance at the Community Health Center's website, chcpb.as.me. At 5 p.m. is when the real party starts, Serbier said. Over 20 businesses and organizations will be set up with booths and activities from free socks to spin art and basketball shooting. It will be a fun event for all. Healthcare services will take place inside the CHC building, and the rest of the fun, meal, games, resources, and backpacks will be in the parking lot behind the CHC. The Webster County pork producers will be on the grill, serving a free meal of pork burgers, beans, chips, a cookie, and water. Mickey Shubin, a prevention supervisor at Community and Family Resources, will be on hand to talk to parents and caregivers about ways that teens hide substance use. The Wake Up Call backpack is filled with everyday items that teens may use to conceal alcohol use, vaping, smoking, and drugs. The backpack was assembled by people with lived experience of drug dependence, parents whose child became involved with drugs and alcohol, as well as law enforcement and school administrator input. UDMO is still accepting applications for families in need of financial assistance for school supplies. Applications are available at UDMO, located at 1325 First Avenue South. The backpacks at Tuesday's event are for Webster County students, but UDMO will have applications for similar programs in other counties the agency serves. The next story on the front page, headline is How the Climate Deal Would Help Farmers Aid the Environment. This is from the Associated Press in St. Louis. The climate deal reached last week by Senate Democrats could reduce the amount of greenhouse gases that American farmers produce by expanding programs that help accumulate carbon in soil, fund climate-focused research, and lower the abundant methane emissions that come from cows. The bill includes more than $20 billion to improve the agriculture sector's impact on the environment, mostly by expanding existing U.S. Department of Agriculture programs that help farmers change to better practices. Farmers would be paid to improve the health of their soil, withstand extreme weather, and protect their land if the bill is enacted. The roughly $370 billion climate and energy spending deal would bring the country closer to cutting greenhouse gas emissions in half by 2030, according to new analyses. That is something many scientists say is important, and that President Joe Biden promised. Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, a longtime holdout on climate legislation, endorsed measures that would benefit electric vehicles, renewable energy, and climate-friendly farming. Agriculture is responsible for 11% of the country's climate warming emissions. The funding would expand programs favored by both environmental groups and the agricultural sector, said Ben Thomas, who focuses on agriculture at the Environmental Defense Fund. They are voluntary, they are incentive-based, they get results in terms of implementing conservation practices on working lands, said Thomas. It's great to see. Thomas said historically, the agricultural sector has not aggressively tackled its contribution to climate change. But that hesitation has shifted in recent years, and more money will accelerate progress. There's a lot of potential, he said. It is worth taking very, very seriously, Thomas said. Cows belch an enormous amount of methane, and agriculture is responsible for more than one-third of human-caused methane emissions, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. This is a way that people's diets, if they are high in meat or dairy, contribute to greenhouse gas buildup. The bill directs funds towards altering what cows eat to reduce these emissions. On farms, soil can hold or sequester carbon if it is left undisturbed and covered by a crop. Money from the bill will expand programs that help farmers turn their soil less, implement climate-friendly crop rotation practices, and plant cover crops that aren't for harvest but improve soil health. The historic funding validates the fact that these practices are important, said Ranjani Prabhakar, an agriculture and climate policy specialist at the environmental group Earth Justice. Cover crops, for example, are only used by a fraction of farmers. If their use was to triple from around 5% of cropland to 15%, it could remove the equivalent of 14 megatons of carbon dioxide per year, roughly the total amount emissions of New Hampshire, according to Kevin Carl, a food and climate researcher at Columbia University. The adoption rate is so low, Carl said, there's a lot of potential improvement. Federal officials already offer farmers help with a variety of environmentally focused issues, including irrigation and fertilizer use. One program helps fund conservation easements for agricultural land. Dan Schieffer works on nitrogen research with the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association and operates a 20-acre farm. He plants cover crops and keeps soil disturbance to a minimum, practices that benefit soil health and reduce soil erosion. But he said cover crops also have drawbacks, requiring farmers who want an environmental benefit to change their practices. There's just more time involved with doing cover crops, he said. The bill also includes money for research. While it is clear that managing soil properly can capture carbon, more needs to be known about important questions like how long sequestered carbon stays in soil. Kaiyu Guan, a professor focused on climate and agriculture at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, said some people believe farmers don't pay enough attention to climate change. I think farmers shouldn't be blamed. They actually should be incentivized. Incentivized, Guan said. Not only are they doing this to be part of the solution to help the climate, they are doing this to help their land. The Associated Press receives support from the Walton Family Foundation for coverage of water and environmental policy. The AP is solely responsible for all content. For all of AP's environmental coverage, visit apnews.com and then search for climate and environment. And the final story on the front page of today's Messenger is about the Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club's annual flower show. Pollinators are focus of flower show. This is by Bill Shea. Helping the bees and butterflies that are crucial to pollinating all plants is the theme of this weekend's annual flower show of the Fort Dodge Federated Garden Club. The show will be at a new location, the Lion's Den in Armstrong Park off Exposition Drive. The show hours are 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and noon to 4 on Sunday. Admission is free. Garden Club President Rita Milberger will be serving lemonade. Save our pollinators is the theme of the show. The Lion's Den will be filled with exhibits and flower arrangements that reflect that theme. About 100 exhibits in the horticulture category are expected, according to Garden Club member Nancy Phillips. Another 50 are expected in the crafts and design category, she said. The art in nature category will feature exhibits made with fresh plant material, dried plant material, and accessories. This category will include hanging around, which is for items meant to be hung up, and bee in her bonnet, which will feature decorated hats. There will also be decorated tables. There will also be educational exhibits about pollinators created by Garden Club members. The displays will be judged and ribbons will be awarded. Next, some short news briefs from the Associated Press. Abortion vote in Kansas sparks new hope for Dems in midterms. This is from New York. Democrats displayed a newfound sense of optimism about the election year political climate Wednesday, after voters in traditionally conservative Kansas overwhelmingly backed a measure protecting abortion rights. At the White House, President Joe Biden hailed the vote in Kansas as the direct result of outrage at the Supreme Court's decision in June to repeal a woman's constitutional right to obtain an abortion. Republicans and the High Court, quote, don't have a clue about the power of American women, Biden said. Last night in Kansas, they found out, end quote. On Capitol Hill, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, boasted of the political winds blowing at Democrats. Last night in the American heartland, the people of Kansas sent an unmistakable message to the Republican extremists, he said. If it's going to happen in Kansas, it's going to happen in a whole lot of states. The next news brief, this is from Austin, Texas. Alex Jones concedes Sandy Hook attack was 100% real. For years, bombastic far-right conspiracy theorist Alex Jones ranted to his millions of followers that the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting was a hoax, that children weren't killed, and that parents were crisis actors in an elaborate ruse to force gun control. Under oath and facing a jury that could hit him with $150 million or more in damages for his false claims, Jones said Wednesday he now realizes that was irresponsible and believes that what happened in the deadliest school shooting in American history was 100% real. Jones's public contrition came on the final day of testimony in a 2-week defamation lawsuit against him and his Austin-based media company Free Speech Systems, brought by Neil Heslin and Scarlett Lewis, the parents of a 6-year-old, Jesse Lewis. Their son was a first grader who was among the 20 students and 6 teachers killed at the school in Newtown, Connecticut, on December 14, 2012. I unintentionally took part in things that did hurt these people's feelings, said Jones, who also acknowledged raising conspiracy claims about other mass tragedies, from the Oklahoma City and Boston Marathon bombings to the mass shootings in Las Vegas and Parkland, Florida. And I'm sorry for that. There is a page in today's paper called Community Showcase, and there are a number of photographs, and I'll describe some of them to you. One is titled Parker's Pals Donates Baskets to Birth Center. The picture shows Anthony and Spencer Hamilton, who recently donated 8 memory baskets to the Trinity Birth Center at Trinity Regional Medical Center for Parker's Pals in memory of their son, Parker. The baskets will be given to parents who experience a miscarriage, stillbirth, or sudden infant death syndrome. A number of Trinity Birth Center employees are holding the baskets. Next is a photograph of Julie Meyer, who was honored for distinguished service by the Iowa Council of Administrators of Special Education. Presenting the award was Chris Wells, who is the IK's secretary. Meyer is a special education consultant with Prairie Lakes Area Education Association and was awarded for distinguished service by the Iowa Council of Administrators of Special Education. The award is presented to individuals making significant contributions to programs and services for students with disabilities. Then there is a photograph titled, Facing Autism Donates to Trinity Foundation. Facing Autism, Inc., a community group raising awareness and acceptance for autism in all people with special needs, recently donated $2,000 to Trinity Foundation to assist with the purchase of an adult changing table. The changing table will be located at Trinity Regional Medical Center at Entrance C. A number of members of the group are pictured with a great big check for $2,000. There's a photograph next of Haley Offerman receiving the scholarship in special education leadership from the Iowa Council for Administrators of Special Education. The Iowa Council of Administrators of Special Education has awarded Haley Offerman the scholarship. She is a special education consultant and chairperson of that department at Prairie Lakes AEA. She will transition to a new role with the agency this fall, that being the facilitator of professional learning. ICASE provides a $1,000 scholarship to educators in special or general education who are working toward an advanced degree in educational leadership. Hofferman, who has a master's degree in special education, is currently working on a second master's degree in the area of education administration, which will be completed this summer. Her goal is to become a director of special education. And the last photograph on this page is of a bunch of young people. 4-H members go on intermediate trip. 46 4-H members from Hamilton, Hardin, Humboldt, Pocahontas, and Webster counties participated in a 7th and 8th grade intermediate trip to Austin and Minneapolis, Minnesota. There were 8 attendees from Webster County, and they are the ones in the photograph: Ayanna Kirby, Luke Monk, Jacob Nieland, Nora O'Connor, Brooklyn Peterson, Cooper Spies, Sylvia Walholtz, and Zoe Walholtz. And here on page 3, a story from the Associated Press in Washington, D.C. GOP targets for Dem bill: inflation, taxes, Manchin, cinema. Republicans see inflation, taxes, and immigration as Democratic weak spots worth attacking, and 2 opposition senators as prime targets in the upcoming battle over an economic package the Democrats want to push through the Senate. The measure embodies some of the top environment, energy, health care, and tax policy aspirations that President Joe Biden and party leaders want to enact as voters start tuning in to this fall's congressional elections. The GOP would like to derail or weaken the measure, or at least force Democrats to take votes that would be painful to defend in re-election campaigns. Republicans are already aiming fire at Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia, who crafted the measure with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, and unexpectedly pumped life into an effort most Democrats considered moribund. Manchin is a conservative Democrat from a deep red state who has scuttled his party's priorities before, and Republicans have savaged him in recent days, an unsubtle signal that they'll be coming for him should he seek re-election in 2024. He made a terrible deal, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky, told reporters this week. How he can defend this from a West Virginia point of view, or think of it as a centrist type of agreement, is astonishing. This is an agreement only Bernie Sanders would love. Even Senator Shelley Moore Capito, Republican of West Virginia, who has a strong relationship with Manchin and seldom clashes with him publicly, lambasted the legislation for imposing a minimum tax on huge profitable corporations that she said would hinder investments. Like many West Virginians, I'm concerned that this tax increase will delay closing the digital divide in rural communities, she said. Republicans are taking a softer approach with Senator Kyrsten Sinema, Democrat of Arizona, who has been coy about the legislation and has shown concerns about tax increases. She is her party's biggest question mark on this bill in the 50-50 chamber, where all Republicans seem certain to vote no. And she's held several discussions with GOP senators during votes this week. Sinema has opposed past proposals to raise taxes on wealthy equity firm executives, which this time would raise around $14 billion of this legislation's $739 billion in revenue. She met with Arizona manufacturers who oppose boosting the corporate minimum tax and thanked her afterward in a tweet for her thoughtful approach and willingness to listen to Arizona job creators. And we'll finish out this first half hour with this date in history. This comes also from the Associated Press. Today is Thursday, August 4th, the 216th day of 2022. There are 149 days left in the year. On August 4, 1944, 15-year-old diarist Anne Frank was arrested with her sister, parents, and four others by the Gestapo after hiding for 2 years inside a building in Amsterdam. Anne and her sister Margot died at the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. Also on this day in 1830, plans for the city of Chicago were laid out. In 1936, Jesse Owens of the U.S. won the second of his four gold medals at the Berlin Olympics as he prevailed in the long jump over German Luz Long, who was the first to congratulate him. On this date in 1964, the bodies of missing civil rights workers Michael Schwermer, Andrew Goodman, and James Cheney were found buried in an earthen dam in Mississippi. On this date in 1987, the Federal Communications Commission voted 4-0 to abolish the Fairness Doctrine, which required radio and television stations to present balanced coverage of controversial issues. On this date in 1993, a federal judge sentenced Los Angeles police officers Stacy Kuhn and Lawrence Powell to 2.5 years in prison for violating Rodney King's civil rights. On this date 10 years ago, Serena Williams beat Maria Sharapova 6-0, 6-1 to join Steffi Graf as the only women to complete the Golden Slam, winning the Olympics and the four majors. On this date 5 years ago, former pharmaceutical CEO Martin Shkreli, who became notorious for a price-gouging scandal, was convicted on federal charges that he deceived investors in a pair of failed hedge funds. He was sentenced months later to 7 years in prison. And 1 year ago on this date, Sydney McLaughlin smashed the world record, and Dalila Muhammad broke it as well in an American 1-2 finish in the women's 400 hurdles at the Tokyo Olympics. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. My name is Rachel Thorson Mithelman. I'm your reader today. And next, we'll turn to today's obituaries. The first obituary in today's paper is from Pocahontas and is for Leon H. Hudick. Leon H. Hudick, age 99, of Pocahontas, passed away on Sunday, July 9th, at the Pocahontas Community Hospital in Pocahontas, Iowa. Memorial services are 11:30 a.m. Tuesday, August 9th, at Resurrection of Our Lord Catholic Church in Pocahontas, with Father Craig Collison officiating. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery in Pocahontas with military rites by the Pocahontas American Legion. There will be no visitation. Powers Funeral Home of Pocahontas is handling the arrangements. For online condolences and obituaries, visit www.powersfh.net. The next is from Humboldt for Mason T. Navy. Mason T. Navy, age 21, of Humboldt, passed away unexpectedly at his home on Sunday, July 31st, 2022. Survivors include his parents, Rod and Heather Navy, sister McKenna Navy, brothers Nathan, spouse Amber Cowell, and Jeremy Kane Kinnitz, grandparents Steve Prenger and Gary and Jeannie Navy, longtime girlfriend Madison Rusher, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his grandmothers, Gail Breutsch, Lona Wilson, and Sammy Pringer. Funeral services will be at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, August 6th, with visitation from 11 until the service time at Zion Lutheran Church in Humboldt. Casual attire is requested. The Mason Lindhardt Funeral and Cremation Service is in charge of the arrangements. The next is a short death notice from Barnum for Diana Condon. Diana Condon, age 73, of Barnum, passed away Wednesday, August 3, 2022, at Trinity Regional Medical Center. Services are pending with Laufersweiler Funeral Home. The next obituary is for James Little. James, or Jim, Lee Little, age 63, of West Des Moines, passed away on July 29, 2022, after a battle with cancer. Jim was born on March 22, 1959, to Joan Elizabeth Nicholson in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Jim is a graduate of Fort Dodge High School and the University of Iowa. He was involved in ROTC through his college years. Jim joined the U.S. Army as a career man and retired as a major in 2004. Once retired, he was promoted to lieutenant colonel. In retirement, Jim continued to enjoy cheering for the Iowa Hawkeyes and the Chicago Cubs. He was a member of the Polk County I Club, enjoyed traveling to bowl games, and liked to cook. More recently, he enjoyed spending time with his twin granddaughters. Jim is survived by his children, Ryan, spouse Lisa Little of Winterset, Emily Little of West Des Moines, and Eleanor Little of Des Moines, their mother, Kristen Little of West Des Moines, his granddaughters, Sarah and Paige Little, his brothers Al, spouse Karen Little of Fort Dodge, and Ken, spouse Diane Little of Belmont. Jim was preceded in death by his mother Joan Little of Fort Dodge. Visitation will be held at Hamilton's on Westtown Parkway in West Des Moines on August 7th from 2 to 4 p.m. A graveside service will be held on August 8th at 12:30 p.m. at the Iowa Veterans Cemetery in Van Meter. In lieu of flowers, the family would like memorial contributions to be made to the University of Iowa Children's Hospital, the VA Hospital, or the University of Iowa ROTC. Condolences may be expressed to the family at hamiltonsfuneralhome.com. And the last obituary is from Pomeroy for Mildred A. Rosedale Ozinga. Mildred A. Rosedale Ozinga, age 95, longtime Pomeroy resident, passed away on July 30, 2022, at the Lakeside Village in Panora, Iowa. Funeral services are 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 13th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Pomeroy, with Pastor Ken Anholtz and Scott Essing officiating. Burial will be in Union Cemetery in Pomeroy. Visitation is 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, August 12th, at Powers Funeral Home in Pomeroy, Iowa. Powers Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. For online condolences and obituaries, visit powersfh.net. Next, we turn to the opinion page. The Messenger editorial is, Iowa Sales Tax Holiday starts Friday. It's a great opportunity to save on back-to-school purchases. It's hard to believe, but area families are already beginning to think about the items that will be needed to send young folks back to school properly equipped and looking good. According to the National Retail Federation, a typical family with children in school will spend about $864 on back-to-school merchandise. Previous surveys by the Federation have shown that clothing and shoes account for about half of a family's back-to-school spending. Finding bargains is part of the fun of back-to-school shopping every year. Clothing and shoes are among the necessities that will be on just about everyone's list. The annual Iowa sales tax holiday that begins Friday and continues Saturday will help shoppers stretch their precious dollars for those items. This program is now in its 23rd year. It exempts from sales tax certain clothing and shoe purchases with an item price under $100. Iowa's legislature launched this two-day tax holiday in 2000. Mike Cormack, a Republican, who at that time represented the Fort Dodge area in the Iowa House of Representatives, was the driving force behind the measure. It's a program that especially benefits those lower-income individuals who must make every penny count, but it is a welcome assist to everyone. During the sales tax holiday, many stores offer sales, providing an even bigger break for shoppers. Many other states have similar tax holidays. Some extend the sales tax exemption to a wider range of school-related items, such as assorted supplies, computers, and books. When the legislature returns to the Capitol, members might consider broadening the applicability of the sales tax exemption. Outfitting kids for school is becoming ever more expensive, and the required purchases go far beyond clothing and shoes. If the policy makes sense, it should reflect the real world of back-to-school costs that shoppers face. The messenger reminds everyone that the Iowa sales tax holiday is an excellent opportunity to acquire needed items at a savings. Don't miss out on the bargains available. And the guest editorial on the opinion page is Unity Point Health and County Health Department team up to help new moms. This is written by Dr. David Ilcheski, who is with Unity Point Clinic OBGYN. He writes, "It is such a privilege being part of our patients' maternity experience and baby's birth. At Unity Point Health Fort Dodge, we have an experienced care team of physicians, nurses, and support staff who offer our patients a wide range of services during each stage of their pregnancy. Our staff provides personal care, along with all the services expecting moms need to make their birth experience the best it can be. However, we also understand that for many families, pregnancy and delivery can be a difficult time, financially and personally. This is why we are very excited to announce that we have recently formed a partnership with Webster County Public Health, so patients know about the additional services and resources available in our community regarding maternal health. Webster County Public Health now has a satellite clinic at Unity Point Clinic OBGYN. All expecting mothers, regardless of insurance or financial status, are encouraged to meet with the Webster County Public Health team to learn what additional support might be valuable to them. Some of the resources they provide to moms and their babies include breastfeeding support, mental health resources, home visits for mom and baby after delivery, obtaining baby supplies such as diapers, wipes, pack and plays, transportation to appointments, weight checks, and more. Their team also assists uninsured patients with Medicaid enrollment. All these services are provided to expecting mothers with no out-of-pocket expense. Together, we are completely dedicated to meeting the unique healthcare needs of our patients and the newest members of our families. The Webster County Public Health Satellite Clinic is located within Unity Point Clinic OBGYN on Mondays and Fridays from 9 a.m. to noon. To schedule appointments, individuals can call our office at 515-574-6870. Again, that is by Dr. David Ilcheski, a Unity Point Clinic OBGYN physician. And before we turn to sports, one last story from Washington via the Associated Press. Update to electors' law desperately needed, senators declare. Republican Senator Susan Collins and Democrat Joe Manchin made the case on Wednesday for overhauling the 1800s-era Electoral Count Act, pushing for quick passage of a bipartisan compromise that would make it harder for a losing candidate to overturn legitimate results of a presidential election. Proposals from their group of 16 senators, 9 Republicans and 7 Democrats, are a response to former President Donald Trump and his allies pushing courts, state legislatures, and Congress to somehow overturn his 2020 loss to President Joe Biden. Trump's efforts culminated in the violence of January 6, 2021, when hundreds of his supporters pushed past police and broke into the Capitol as Congress was certifying the results. An update to the electoral law is something our country desperately needs, Manchin said Wednesday, testifying at a Senate hearing on the bill. The time for Congress to act is now. Manchin and Collins, who introduced a series of proposals to reform the law last month along with 14 other senators, are pushing for passage of the legislation before the end of the congressional session in January. The bills could face a harder path after November's midterm elections if Republicans take over the House, where Democrats are leading a separate effort to revise the law. This is something we shouldn't carry over into another election cycle, said Missouri Senator Roy Blunt, the top Republican on the Senate Rules Committee who has been supportive of the effort. The Electoral Count Act of 1887 governs the counting and certification of electoral votes in presidential elections and has long been criticized as arcane, vaguely written, and vulnerable to abuse. Those fears were realized after the 2020 contest when Trump's allies worked to exploit those weaknesses, pushing states to put forward alternate slates of electors and pressuring Vice President Mike Pence to use his ceremonial role in the congressional joint session on January 6th to object to the results or delay certification. The bipartisan group of senators has worked for months to find agreement on a way to revamp the process, eventually settling on the series of proposals introduced last month. The legislation would add a series of safeguards to the electoral count, increasing the thresholds for challenging results so state or federal officials can't exploit loopholes to advocate for a preferred candidate. The first headline on the sports page: Fort Dodge Senior High Nordman Award, Jalen Adams. It's titled Built Different, and there's a photograph of Fort Dodge Senior High Florence Nordman Award co-winner Jalen Adams with her parents, Dan and Andy. This is by Eric Pratt. Jalen Adams was never looking for acceptance or comfortable with conformity. And while softball has been and always will be her first love, Fort Dodge Senior High's 2022 co-Florence Nordman Award winner didn't limit her experiences to the diamond. In fact, Adams actively sought ways to push herself as an athlete, even if it meant facing the kind of struggle and adversity she'd never see on the field during the summer months. I guess what makes Jalen's father, Dan, and I most proud is the fact that she loved to push her limits and try new things, said Dodger softball coach Andy Adams. Her passion was softball and taking our program to places it hadn't been before. She helped for us to accomplish that, but she also didn't want that to be her only high school memory or experience. When you try new things, it gives you a different perspective and appreciation for not only your primary sport, but the other athletes who put in the time and effort in different seasons. I will always be an advocate for multiple sports. It's good for you physically and mentally. Jalen wanted to test uncharted waters and expand her boundaries, and to me, honestly, that refreshed her in the off season and drove her even more once she went back to working on softball. Adams flourished under the spotlight and pressure of being Fort Dodge's ace pitcher and hitter at the top of the lineup over the last five seasons. The numbers are nothing short of staggering. The University of Iowa recruit leaves as the Dodgers' all-time leader in career pitching victories, 111, strikeouts, 880, and offensive batting average, 462, among a slew of other individual records. It wasn't the personal achievements Adams will remember with the most pride, though. The four-time first-team All-Stater was a part of 174 victories versus only 30 defeats, 5 state tournament trips, 3 consecutive championship game appearances, and a 2021 Class 5A title. Team accomplishments her mother simply laughs about in retrospect and deems not only improbable, but borderline impossible by today's standards, given Fort Dodge Senior High is the smallest school in Iowa's largest division. The Nordman Award had only ever really crossed my mind a few times over my high school career, said Adams, the 2022 Gatorade Iowa High School Softball Player of the Year, who also lettered in basketball and swimming. I knew that I had a pretty good shot at receiving it, but I never really focused much on the meaning behind it, given I was in a class with many other talented athletes who were heavily involved in multiple sports. That helped me realize how important this award truly was. Being a multi-sport athlete has its struggles, but to be elite, you have to make sacrifices and put in the outside work that often goes unseen. Adams shouldered the immense responsibility of being the face of the Dodger program in the summer alongside fellow seniors Tori Bennett and Haley Wills. In the fall, she tried something new during her prep days and joined the Fort Dodge Senior High swim team. Basketball season then occupied her time in the winter months. Jalen surprised me a little with her decision to go out for swimming because she was definitely a fish out of water, so to speak, Andy Adams said. But she learned so much about herself in that environment. Coach Ashley Beaumont really pushed her, and she loved competing in what was a pretty foreign environment to her at first. Basketball was something she's always done, but again, she had to understand the dynamics of being a team player and functioning within a system where she knew she wasn't going to be the main option. We always felt that if you understand there are rules and expectations in our household, it doesn't matter if you're in the classroom, the field, the pool, the court, or whatever, that you would benefit from learning and being consistent in holding yourself to a certain standard, even with different results. Jalen always embraced that philosophy. Adams kept the bigger picture in mind as she honed her skills and matured as an athlete. If I were to give an underclassman or any high schooler advice on commitment, I would tell them this: take the little wins each day, said Adams, who graduated with a cumulative grade point average of 3.89. Don't always focus on the end goal. If you enjoy the journey, you will reach your destination, and never let your sport define who you are. Have an optimistic attitude and always be ready for any challenges the day may bring. I wish I could have found my voice as a leader a little earlier in my sports career, but I think that's kind of the whole point. It's supposed to take a while for you to figure out your role on a team. I feel that as an upperclassman, I truly did that. Adams embraced the relationship both on and off the field with her mom, a Hall of Famer who had already experienced unprecedented success at Fort Dodge Senior High, without the thrill and glory of being in the championship round, while Adams and her teammates delivered in ways the veteran coach previously thought were unattainable. The players, in turn, learned so much more about themselves as people in the process. My mother has been my biggest influence. She is there for me on and off the field and always shows me the life lessons softball and the other sports I participated in have to offer, Jalen said. Even though I don't see myself being a teacher in the future, watching her help students and shape them into strong young adults has been a very unique and special perspective I have been lucky to experience. I hope to have as much impact on lives as she does. Adams also embraced sharing the Nordman Award with Bennett, a lifelong friend and future Hawkeye softball teammate. Considering it's only the second time the award has ever been split, I felt it meant that much more to both Tori and I, Adams says. We have always been close and supportive of one another and have competed in many sports together, So to know that our hard work was recognized like this has been very rewarding. Adams also thanked her father for being supportive in a variety of ways through the years. "My dad has always been in my corner when it comes to athletics, from getting up early on weekends to take me to softball tournaments to getting me ice after my games," Adams said. "He always knows the right things to say, even outside of softball, and knows how to make my day better. I see how hard he works as a teacher, driver's education instructor, and coach. It motivates me to work as hard as I can in all aspects of my life." Adams hopes her legacy in Fort Dodge is more about the unparalleled list of statistics, is more than about the unparalleled list of statistics and records. "I just hope to be remembered as a hard worker and a good leader," Adams said. "Being a Dodger means always having a community you can rely on. It has given me so many opportunities that I don't believe I would have experienced at a bigger school." Andy Adams added, "Jalen saw it all growing up, the good, the bad, and everything in between when it comes to what makes a program behind the scenes. I think that gave her a rare point of view and helped motivate her to succeed not just for herself or her teammates, but on behalf of the entire town and everyone who has supported us through the years. She's always been mature beyond her years when it came to identifying the best path to take and avoiding the mistakes other kids tend to make as teenagers. For as much as Dan or I or her other coaches would like to take credit for that, and I'm sure, collectively speaking, we've all influenced her in our own ways, that natural mentality and inner drive is what makes Jalen unique and special in ways that make us so incredibly proud and excited for the next chapter in her journey." And we'll finish with this story about former UNI lineman Penning. This is by Brett Martell of the AP from Metairie, Louisiana. Saints first-round draft choice Trevor Penning tends to finish off blocks with a feisty flourish. "When you think he's done, he's not done," guard Cesar Ruiz said after a training camp practice Tuesday, when he compared Penning to a pit bull. "He definitely has that finishing mentality that you love in offensive linemen." The 6'7", 325-pound Penning, a left tackle out of northern Iowa, is earning respect from fellow offensive linemen and showing he can cause defensive players to lose their cool. Penning has been at the center of a couple brief after-the-whistle skirmishes this week, starting on Monday when he exchanged blows with second-year defensive end Peyton Turner and veteran end Taco Charlton. Penning appeared to incite more testiness on Tuesday in exchanges with veteran defensive back J.T. Gray and undrafted rookie defensive end Scott Patchen. "It's nice having someone who comes in that has that dog mentality and is just angry as soon as they step on the field," Saints veteran center Eric McCoy said of Penning. "It's kind of boosts the meanness of the whole group." Penning was unapologetic about his brief dust-up, but didn't fault Turner either. "It's a tough game for tough people," Penning said. "There's no bad blood between us. We're just competitors, competing. That's how I've always played the game. To me, that's just how it's meant to be played," Penning said. "I'm not going out there to start a fight or anything. But things happen. The finishing ability, that's what I pride myself in," Penning added. "That's always going to be part of my game." It remains to be seen if Penning, drafted 19th overall, will start as a rookie. He's competing for playing time with veteran James Hurst, who served last season as a versatile backup and became a spot starter at multiple spots on the line, depending on the overall health of the unit. Hurst has been getting the bulk of first-team snaps at left tackle. Penning gets a few as well. "Penning has got all the talent in the world," Saints offensive line coach Doug Marone said. We've just got to continue to lay the foundation with him." Penning is also trying to become the latest small school prospect to play a major role in New Orleans. Northern Iowa is in the second-tier football championship subdivision of college football, but the Saints have a track record of turning small school prospects into contributors. Taron Armstead, who started at left tackle for 8-plus seasons before leaving in free agency last season, was a third-round draft choice out of FCS-level Arkansas Pine Bluff. Retired right guard Jari Evans, now serving as a coaching intern during Saints training camp, was a fourth-rounder out of Division II Bloomsburg. German Bushrod was a fourth-rounder out of Towson, who started 4 seasons at left tackle for the Saints, before moving on in free agency to Chicago and Miami, where he also occupied starting roles. If small school prospects haven't dominated in college, to me that's a red flag. Jari dominated, Bushrod dominated, Trevor dominated. One thing I think has always been great about this organization, we have no problem taking a player and putting him in there if we think he's ready, no matter where they come from. As long as someone is hungry and they have that little chip on their shoulder, you have a chance. While Marone said he doesn't want Penning to scuffle habitually or hurt the team on game days or in practice, he doesn't want to dial back the rookie's intensity either. There's a fine line to it. We don't want to take the bite out of this guy, but we've got to be smart about it too. Thanks for listening to today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. My name is Rachel Thorson Mithelman. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.